Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning visit with the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Kevin Most. Good morning, Dr. Most. We know about ultra-processed food. It's not good for us, but there's a new study out, and what do we make of this? Is it worse than we thought, eating all this junk?
Yeah, Bob. I mean, we know how bad it is, right? We've already known so many studies have been done to show it causes high blood pressure, increases our chance of colon cancer, obesity, and diabetes. But this study looked at 32,000. Now, unfortunately, the study was limited to women, but it was 32,000 women. It was actually a nurses association. And what they did is they showed, after taking out all the other potentials and screening out BMI and screening out menopause therapy and alcohol use and sleep, what they found is that the chance of depression rises dramatically based on how much ultra-processed food an individual has. So very concerning when we look at the impact that this has, as well as how frequently we ingest this and how easy it is for us to ingest this.
Just to be clear, what foods are we talking about here?
Well, you're talking about anything that is highly processed. You're talking about even soft drinks, but you're talking about a lot of frozen foods, a lot of foods that have been processed in the grocery store where you're not buying fresh. You're buying things that are in boxes and things that have been frozen. Mm. So it's really tough to sort them out and tough to eliminate them completely from our diet. But certainly we're going to start looking at, boy, we need to get back to more natural things instead of things that have highly preservatives in them and have these fake sugars.
Now, we're told this is an observational study. What does that mean, that when we say it's observational only?
Yeah, so it's not causal. In other words, we don't say, because of this, we can now tell why we got to, because of A, we now know why we got to B. In other words, we would look at UPF and say, oh, you know what? The UPF is causing problems in our neurotransmitter in our brain, and because of that, it is causing depression. So we don't know that link. All we know is that we observed this large group of people, and with that observation, we see this trend towards an increased chance of depression. So we don't say it causes it, but certainly it's an observation that these individuals who had a higher intake of UPF also had a much higher intake or much higher chance of depression.
In these ultra-processed foods, is salt usually the big bad villain causing all of these problems?
Well, the bad thing is we don't know, right? Because not only is salt in there, but the artificial sweeteners are in there and other chemicals are in there. So we haven't gotten down to one culprit that's causing it. Now, we do know that salt is probably the biggest culprit for high blood pressure and heart disease, but certainly the other illnesses, we have not linked that directly to salt. And, you know, like a lot of these, if you look at some of these boxes, after you try to read what the ingredients are in some of these things, you're like, what am I? I can't even pronounce the words. Mm-hmm. What am I actually putting into my body? Mm-hmm. So not one issue to cause it, but certainly cumulatively, it certainly is appearing that it's going to increase people's chances, at least women's chances of depression.
With Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most and the new Alzheimer's drug, it was approved in July. What's the latest on that, doctor?
Yeah, Bob, you know, probably the latest information on that is what CMS just decided as far as how much cost they were going to cover. We knew they were going to cover a portion of the cost, but we did not hear exactly how much, because this is a very expensive drug. You know, this drug is over $26,000 a year treatment. And CMS came out last week and said, you know what, we're going to cover 80%. Now, everyone was ramping up for this even before they knew, you know, how much that would cost would be covered. So now what we're doing is we're getting all our ducks in a row. And what I mean by that is that you have to have the right patient for this. One, they have to be early enough on in the illness, and you test that by cognitive testing to know that we'll make an impact. Two, you have to have a spinal tap or imaging that'll show that you have beta amyloid present, because that's where this drug is going to actually work on. And two, we're going to do a blood test to check on a genetic marker to make sure that you don't have that, because it is kind of makes that the Leqembi does not work. So everybody is getting these in place to identify patients, and I think you're going to start to see a large number of patients start to get these infusions here. I would say probably in the next month or so, you're looking at all the major health systems preparing for this, and hopefully it's going to turn out to be the blockbuster drug that it showed during the clinical trials.
So it sounds like you think this is going to drastically change how Alzheimer's is treated here?
Oh, it definitely will. You know, this is the first drug that actually has shown that it will slow the progression of the illness substantially. And really, you know, like I said in the past, this is like the penicillin of antibiotics, right? This is the first drug we have seen that actually will do this. So now they're only going to work to perfect it even more. Will we be able to get it where you be able to take it orally instead of an infusion? Will we be able to perfect it better so that there's less side effects and less chance for brain bleeding? And that certainly will occur, and that's what they're working on now. But individuals have this window of opportunity, if you're early on in the illness, to slow this illness and not only add quality of life, but quantity of life as well to individuals who have this.
So for people already suffering from Alzheimer's, this can still help a bit?
Well, it depends how advanced they are. You know, we want to make sure that we're getting the full impact of the drug. So this is for patients who have been diagnosed recently or in the early stages of Alzheimer's. There's many stages. But we want to make sure that it works properly to get the impact that we want. So it's not for every Alzheimer's patient. Those who have advanced illness and advanced disease are probably not going to qualify for this. But really, those that are in the early stages of this illness, knowing what the projection is of this illness, it certainly is going to be a great opportunity and a great option for them.
Yeah, good news. I'm looking at a batch of listener questions for you, and they're all about the same thing, the timing of these shots. Let's start with this one. Can you ask Dr. Most, is it too soon to get a flu shot?
No, it's not too soon. You know, I'm a big proponent of getting a flu shot about the second week in October. And you say, well, why did you just happen to randomly choose that date? And the reason is it takes about 2 weeks for it to fully hit its prime. So when you get the shot, it's not like you go into Walgreens and you get your shot and you walk out and you're protected. No, the body is starting to react to that shot and it's building up the immunity. And it takes about 10 days to 14 days to be fully immune. The reason I say the middle of October is I want to make sure I have great protection around Thanksgiving, our first big major travel, and I want to make sure we have great protection through the flu season, which will bring us to March. So some individuals who like to get their flu shot in early August, I'm afraid that that wanes a little bit, and if we have a late flu season, you're not going to have the protection that you need. So I'm a big proponent for, you know, the first week, second week in October to get you protected through Thanksgiving, and also to make sure you're primarily protected through the busiest flu season, which we know usually comes in January and February.
Now, we've been told it's okay to get the COVID shot and the flu shot and whatever else you need at the same time, but couldn't that be a bit problematic for anyone who may suffer a bit of an ill effect from getting the shot?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we look at side effects of the shots as one of the biggest deterrents that people see, right? They say, I'm not going to get that shot because it caused X, Y, or Z. And certainly we, you know, try to minimize those with the formulations that we have. So this year, you know, with flu and COVID coming out at the same time, I'm recommending go ahead and get them both at the same time. Get them both in the same arm. The study has shown that by getting them both in the same arm, you actually have an increased immunity. Now, certainly you're going to have a little discomfort in that arm for a day or two. And some individuals might have a little body aches, but the vast majority of people are going to have minimal to no side effects. And I'll tell you, anybody who has had influenza, full course of it, or has anybody's had a bad case of COVID, oh boy, I'll take a couple days of a sore arm over any of those illnesses.
Yeah, no kidding. Here's one from someone who says, I'm traveling to Australia very soon in October. I've had two Moderna shots and three boosters. The last one was in August of 2022. I'm 75 years old. Should I get another booster?
Absolutely. You know, two reasons for this individual. One, their age at 77, they're in the, you know, immunocompromised classification there, so certainly they should. Two, the other thing that's important is the COVID vaccine they're getting now is totally different than the one they got. It's more based on the strain that is circulating right now. and the influenza shot that you're going to get matched up well with those in the southern hemisphere, which is where this individual is heading. So if he's going to get a flu shot and a COVID shot prior to going, and hopefully he's got a little two-week window here before he goes, which would be great, he's going to have great protection down there if they're having a late flu season in the area of Australia that he's headed.
Here's another one also about the timing of all this and travel. I usually get my COVID vaccine before Thanksgiving, but this year I also have an international work trip. In late February, I will have to man a booth at a convention of thousands of people. Should I get two vaccines, or will one Thanksgiving vaccination cover me in late February?
Yeah, you know, interesting question, in the way he's asking it is he's looking for coverage in the, you know, 4 months later and getting the shot to also protect himself through November, through the Thanksgiving time. If he's talking about influenza, absolutely, go ahead and get that shot. Now, if he's talking about COVID, we know that the COVID immunity wanes a little bit. This is a brand new vaccine with a brand new strain, so we don't know how it's going to wane. But if he's talking about getting it in mid-November, he certainly would have coverage through February for both illnesses.
If you have a question for Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, you can text us or email us, and we'll try to get to as many as we can next Monday. Thanks, as always, Doc. Have a good one.
You got it, Bob. We'll talk soon.